Happy Buddha's birthday. Today's the day. We couldn't go to sleep last night thinking of all the presents that would be around the tree when we got up. Oh, wrong story. But actually, at another time, as we are leaving the Zen Center or reflecting over dinner, we might think of where ceremonies fit in our lives, what it looked like. Ceremonies in our lives. What does it look like? Something like this. Buddha's birthday. Or Easter coming up in a couple of weeks. I think it's kind of a rallying point for us humans around a central organizing theme of our culture. And so our Western Zen culture is not so big, and maybe we haven't identified as being part of Western Zen culture for very long. But as a matter of fact, we have carried on the tradition of organizing around the central theme of our practice. And then us Western Zen practitioners have to sort of say, well, this central theme of ours is emptiness. How do you plan a party around emptiness? So for further reflection, and it will be a party, and maybe this 4 days sesshin, 3.5 days sesshin, is the party around emptiness. Just sitting, an occasional meal, done in silence, responding to a bell. Maybe that's the party, or at least part of the party. I have thought about these Mahayana scriptures, like what we've been looking at, the Vimalakirti, and it's language that I don't really hear so much. It's imagery that's new to me, a little ornate than I'm used to. Even growing up in a Protestant church the way I did with my family. It's a little more ornate than that. But I think, one image that came up for our ancestors was that this emptiness or this Buddha nature or this Dharma body of the Buddha that was not separate from us, that was us, that is us, has been seen as radiant light which might be an attempt to put words on what that could be. And I think some of the imagery, the ornate imagery that comes out of the sutras, is an attempt to go in that vein. How do we even talk about this? Are the central organizing tradition, culture of our lives. I'm going to read a lot today in the next 25 minutes from Mahayana Sutra, and it gives a kind of a little hint or a little you'll know when it comes. It's about, you know, how do we really understand this practice? And it might just be cause for further reflection. How do we understand this practice of sweet tea over the Buddha's, the baby Buddha's head? You know, I grew up where people were baptized. I was baptized. So that's not so different. I can kind of understand that, but sweet tea and the standing Buddha, that wasn't part of my early childhood image formation. So, or all the flowers, but you know, there were flowers in the churches that I attended. You know, I'm going to read the story of Buddha's birth, and what do you know? It was Immaculate Conception. As I mean, where did they get that idea? I know, what's up with that? I mean, like. Yeah. Or you can't imagine. You can't imagine a spiritual figure coming about through such carnal, such as human activities. But and it's funny because, you know, we just read yesterday in the Vimalakirti Sutra that the family of the Buddha is nothing but greed, hate, and delusion, and the 10 sins and the 6 obscurances. You know, so it's food for thought. Food for thought. And so let's get into it. There'll be more time. There'll be infinite lifetimes to figure this out. I'm going to use high tech here. Total high tech. And I'm going to... Oops, I hope I brought that sheet. Yes. I'm going to read things out of the sutra that's called Lalita Vistara, the full display, the whole works, the complete play, is some of the translation. And I don't know anything about the sutra. I've not studied it, except it gives a nice description of the Buddha's birth. So I don't know anything else about it. I'll read a few from a few things from the chapter called Setting Out, when the Bodhisattva Buddha is getting ready to come down to the Saha world, Jambudvipa, the Buddhist name for planet Earth. And he's, I guess, doing kind of prepping up in the heaven of joy, and with other bodhisattvas and other sages and other Buddhas. He's kind of giving lectures up there before he goes to Jambudvipa. You know, maybe he's kind of like the Tanto, the head monk at Tassajara, who's in charge of teaching the monks there in the heaven of joy. And but they're all talking about him now going down to Jambudvipa to be the Buddha. Friends, I will now proceed to Jambudvipa. In the past, when I practiced the conduct of a bodhisattva, I attracted sentient beings through the four activities of giving, pleasant speech, beneficial activity, and demonstrating consistency in speech and aims. But friends, I would be acting without gratitude, and it would be completely inappropriate if I did not now accept unexcelled, perfect, and complete awakening. It's kind of like, you know, he didn't say, well, I shouldn't say he's so modest, because, you know, two more chapters, he's the world-honored one by his own admission. So, it's kind of like he's a monk, and, you know, it's kind of like coming to Sashin, and we say, Gilbert, now you're the Jiko, and Michael, you'll be the Soku, and Rachel, you'll be the Ino, and on another day you'll get another assignment. It's kind of like, you know, the Buddha obviously signed on to the spiritual life, and becoming part of the Sangha many lifetimes before, and now he was just going to accept, okay, I'll rotate through unparalleled, complete, perfect enlightenment, unexcelled, complete, perfect enlightenment. And that means I've got to develop a Buddhaverse, a Buddha land, a Buddha field, and be a teacher, and teach liberation from suffering. I've got to help purify this Buddha field, as we heard the term in Vimalakirti Sutra. So it's not like he said, I've worked hard, and these are the insights that I've developed. And I want to teach those insights. He was sort of given this mantle. Okay, now it's my turn. And the others in the heaven of joy wept and said, "Virtuous one, without you the heaven of joy will lose its splendor." So he was apparently well liked. To this, he was still a bodhisattva, to this the bodhisattva replied, to the great retinue of gods around him. Well, the Bodhisattva Maitreya will now teach you the Dharma. And the Bodhisattva, with a capital B, destined to be the Buddha, took the crown from his own head and placed it on the head of the Bodhisattva Maitreya, saying, "You, virtuous one, shall awaken to the perfect and complete Buddhahood after me. You're next." Thus it was the Bodhisattva enthroned. Thus it was that the Bodhisattva enthroned the Bodhisattva Maitreya in the heaven of joy. Then he again spoke to the retinue around him. "Friends, in what form should I enter the womb of a mother?" So I can even make this print larger. And they all had different ideas. Maybe you should be a young Brahmin, sort of the high class. India had several classes, as you all know. But others got a little more creative and said, maybe you should be a Gandharva or a Kinnara or a Maharaja or a Maharaga or the moon god or the sun god or a Garuda. A lot of those were animals, mystical animals. But there was one sage who was present, Ugrateja. Having been a sage in his previous life, he had taken rebirth among the gods, where he had now become an irreversible form from his unexcelled, complete, perfect awakening. And he said, "The priests' mantras and the treatises of the Vedas mention the proper form for a bodhisattva when descending into the womb of his mother. It should be in the form of an excellent great elephant with six tusks covered with golden netting. Its head should be very red and exceedingly handsome. It should ooze fragrant fluids from its temples and have a glorious body. Someone who has learned in the Vedas and scriptures of the priests will recognize such a feature." I mean, who wouldn't? An elephant. Oh, this is odd. Someone will be sure to see that and predict the arrival of a person endowed with the 32 marks of a Buddha. So that's what they decided on. Monks, while the Buddha was still residing in the supreme heaven of joy, he considered the time for his birth. At that time, he manifested 8 omens at the sublime residence of King Suddhodana, where he was the father, where he was to be born. What were these 8? These are very nice. The residence was cleaned of all weeds and stumps. That was the first miracle. And in addition, there were no mosquitoes, flies, bees, or snakes. It was covered with flowers. The second one was flocks of birds came to the palace from the Himalayan mountains. There were Patraguptas, parrots, mynas, cuckoos, swans, curlews, peacocks, nightingales, many more. The birds had beautiful and delightful wings and many colors and sang melodious sounds. They perched on the verandas, turrets, doorways, and pavilions. The birds were joyful and content. They each sang happily. This was the second omen. In all of the parks in the on the palace grounds were delightful parks and woodlands with various blossom trees that carried fruits from all the seasons. This was the third omen. In each of King Suddhodana's lotus ponds, there were lotuses the size of cartwheels, each with trillions of petals. This was the fourth omen. In the sublime residence of King Suddhodana, all the provisions like sesame oil, honey, sugar, sugarcane juice were never depleted and appeared to be full, even though they had been used abundantly. This was the fifth omen. Oops. In Suddhodana's residence, all the instruments, such as the kettle drums, the clay and wooden kettle drums, the flutes, the lutes, the pipes, the string lutes, the bells, the cymbals, suddenly emitted great music. This was the sixth omen. All the containers of different types of precious substances, such as gold, silver, jewels, pearls, beryl, shells, crystal, all the lids flew open and displayed their flawless abundance. This was the seventh omen. And the eighth one was a pure and immaculate light, much brighter than the sun and moon, appeared and produced mental and physical pleasure. So this is the preparation. The Bodhisattva that was to be the Buddha named his successor Maitreya. The group of gods decided that you should first appear as an elephant in the womb, and the palace where you were going to be born was readied with all of these eight omens. Then the womb entering. The leaves of the trees unfurled and most exquisite flowers blossomed. It was neither cold nor hot. There was no fog or dust. Fresh green grass covered the grounds everywhere. On the 15th day, during the full moon, while his future mother was observing the precept ceremony on the full moon, she was fully conscious and aware from the fine realm of the heaven of joy to the womb of his mother. The Bodhisattva was fully conscious and aware. He entered the womb through his mother's right side in the form of a baby elephant, while white in color, with six tusks. His head was the color of a reddish insect, and the tusks were blazing gold. He had all his limbs intact and his full faculties. As he entered, he stayed only on the right side of the room, never on the left. As this occurred, Queen Maya was sleeping in her pleasant bed and saw the following dream. A snowy, silver-colored elephant with six tusks, beautiful feet, exquisite trunk, and a perfect red head, moving in a fine gait with joints as stable as a diamond, that perfect elephant entered my womb. I had never seen, heard, or experienced such a rare happiness. This is her dream. Feeling this physical and mental bliss, I became absorbed in concentration. When she awoke, Queen Maya adorned herself with ornaments and flowing garments, refreshed her body and mind. She felt affectionate joy and calm. She rose from her bed. She goes to visit the king and tells him her dream. When he heard this message, he became very elated and he rose from his throne. I guess he got up early to sit on the throne. Surrounded by his ministers and townspeople, he went to the Ashoka forest. But his body felt suddenly very heavy and he was unable to enter the forest. Reflecting a little, he spoke these verses. I don't remember my body ever feeling this way. Even as I led my army into battle, now I cannot even enter my own property. Can anybody tell me what happened? And some gods had settled into the middle of the sky. They revealed their bodies and said these in verse to the king. Your Majesty, a bodhisattva, a great being with qualities of austerity and discipline, honored by the three worlds, loving and compassionate, empowered by merit and wisdom, has left the heaven of joy for the womb of Queen Maya in order to become your son. So he finally gets to Queen Maya, who replies, a fine and beautiful elephant, white as snow, more dazzling than the moon, well proportioned with beautiful legs and joints as firm as diamonds, has entered my womb. In my sleep I saw this trilocosm illuminated, its darkness gone. I felt no anger, aggression, or hatred. I felt peace and full of bliss. It goes on like this. But let me just tell you that the bodhisattvas and sages and gods that he left behind in heaven of joy all got together and said, he can't be alone down there on Jambudvipa during these 10 months of gestation. Who will be his attendants? So they all decided that in these 10 months that they would be his attendants. And all of that occurred unbeknownst to Queen Maya or King Suddhodana. But there was this kind of this... and they decided that that the Buddha really liked on Heaven of Joy, Tushita Heaven, this certain little palace with encrusted with jewels and the diamond throne, and that's where he should stay these 10 months. So that was brought there as well. This in the Vimalakirti Sutra, this idea of the Mount Sumeru being placed inside the mustard seed. We talked about that, I think, on Wednesday night, as Vimalakirti was just looking at Shariputra and said, it's inconceivable. And Shariputra, are you destined to be disciplined by miracles? Are you really willing to follow miracles in your life? And if you are, this is one of them. And I kind of left it at that. But Vimalakirti goes on to say that because Mount Sumeru is empty and the mustard seed is empty, it's like a math problem that zero easily can fit into zero. Zero goes into zero infinite number of times in Buddhist math. And I think the same equation applies in this case. Whole palaces, whole red-headed elephants can be gestated with only bliss being felt, not only in the mother, but in the whole Jambudvipa realm. Zero goes into zero a million times. The birth. When Maya Devi, Queen Maya, with the Devi part like a deva, sort of a otherworldly or godlike, what's it called when you the prefixes that honor and elevate?
Honorific.
An honorific. Thank you. It's kind of an honorific. When Maya Deva arrived at the Lumbini Grove, she stepped down from the fine chariot. Human and divine attendants encircled her. She wandered from tree to tree, grove to grove. She looked among all the trees and eventually arrived beneath a very special and exquisite fig tree. Its branches spread out full of lush and clusters of blossoms and further adorned with numerous flowers from the realms of both humans and gods. Richly scented clothes of many colors were draped across its branches. It was sparkling with light. Its branches were long and spread out spaciously. It was a tree to which the wholesome and peaceful gods of the pure realms would bow down and touch with their heads, including their topknots and crowns. Now the queen and her retinue had arrived at this pure and stainless fig tree. However, at this moment, the bodhisattva's magnificence and power caused the fig tree itself to bow down and pay homage to him. Maya Deva stretched out her right arm like a flash of lightning appearing in the middle of the sky and grasped the branch of the tree. She auspiciously directed her gaze towards the sky. At that point, 60,000 gods and goddesses from the desire realm approached Maya Deva to assist her and venerate her. Such were the miracles that occur while the bodhisattva was in the womb. Now the 10 months were complete and he emerged from his mother's right side, fully aware and mindful. In this way he was unstained by any human impurities, which otherwise are said to stain everyone else. Consider me stained. Monks at that point, at that time, the Lord of the gods, the Brahma, the Lord of the Saha world, appeared before the Bodhisattva. As they remembered and recognized him, the temple in which the Bodhisattva had dwelt while in his mother's womb was carried off. Thus the Bodhisattva was first received by the gods rather than by humans, sort of godly midwives. As soon as he was born, the Bodhisattva stepped to the ground. Wherever his feet touched, a large lotus immediately sprang from the earth. Then the great Naga kings, Nanda and Upananda, revealed their bodies in the sky and produced, they're underwater kings, Nanda and Upananda. They appeared in the sky and produced two streams of cool and warm water with which to rinse the baby Buddha's body. So two streams of water, two ladles of sweet tea, get my drift. It's all coming together.
So we can think of ourselves as Naga kings.
Naga kings, yes, Naga kings and queens. Chakra and Brahma, the guardians of the world, and many hundreds of thousands of gods bathed the Bodhisattva in perfumed water and scattered flower petals over him, a parasol of precious gems, and two yak tail whisks also appeared from mid-air. The Bodhisattva stood on a large lotus and surveyed the four directions with his lion's gaze, the gaze of a great being. At this time, the Bodhisattva, with unhindered higher knowledge, which he manifested due to the ripening of the precious roots of virtue, saw the entire great tri-chilio-cosm. He saw all the cities, towns, just like Vimalakirti yesterday. He saw all of the Buddha verses. He knew perfectly well the minds of all sentient beings and carefully surveyed them. However, in the entire great tri-chilio-cosm, the Bodhisattva did not see anyone like himself. At that point, he felt a lion-like fearlessness, free of anxiety or apprehension. Without any hesitation or wavering, he reminded himself of his good motivations. Because he examined the minds of all sentient beings, he now knew their thoughts. Unsupported, he took seven steps toward the east and declared, "I will be the cause of all virtuous practices." When he took a step, a lotus appeared under each step. He then took seven steps toward the north and toward the south and said, "I am worthy of the offering of gods and humans." He took seven steps to the west. Pausing on the seventh step, he proclaimed these satisfying lion-like words, "I am the supreme being on this earth. This is my last birth, where I shall uproot old age, sickness, and death." He then took seven steps to the north and said, "I will be supreme among all," that's the north, "all sentient beings." Next, he took seven steps downhill. There's 10 directions, by the way. "I will subjugate Mara," the god of distraction, "and his army. I will cause great rain clouds of Dharma to shower down on all hell beings, extinguishing the fires of hell and filling them all with happiness." Finally, he took seven steps uphill and said, "All sentient beings will look up to me." So, quite an auspicious birth. There were lots of flower petals in the air during this time. It goes on to say, not to mention quaking of the earth. and lightning in the sky. So it was a moment that everyone remembered. I want to be sure to give this reflection His cousin Ananda was on site, and they began a dialogue. The Blessed One responded to Ananda by saying, "In the future, maybe 2019 perhaps, in the future there will be some monks who do not train their bodies and minds and do not acquaint themselves with discipline and knowledge. Like unskilled children, they will be highly proud, wild, arrogant, unrestrained, distracted, hesitant, doubting, and without trust. These monks of 2019 might bring stains on the monastic order and not live like proper monks. When they hear, for instance, about the Bodhisattva entering his mother's womb in such a way, they will not believe it. Instead, they will gather and gossip, saying, 'Listen, all of you, just listen to this nonsense. The Bodhisattva supposedly entered,' they're still gossiping. 'The Bodhisattva supposedly entered his mother's womb, where he mixed with impure fluids, and yet he is said to have had such enjoyments. Moreover, it is said that when he was born, he emerged from his mother's right side without being sullied by any stains of humans. But how could this be possible?'" Now, I know there's no doubters in this room, but maybe someplace else. You know, San Francisco Zen Center has a lot more monks. Maybe there's a few doubting monks among men. "Such fools will not understand that the bodies of those who have engaged in excellent actions are not begotten from unclean fluids. Monks, such sublime beings enter into and abide in the womb in the finest manner. It is due to their love and compassion for sentient beings that bodhisattvas are born into the world of humans, since gods do not turn the wheel of dharma. Why is this, Ananda? It is because beings would otherwise have been discouraged, thinking the Blessed One, the Thus Gone One, the Worthy One, the completely perfect Buddha is a god. We are just humans. We are not able to achieve that state." Blessed One, in the future, Ananda said, "Blessed One, in the future, will there be monks who reject excellent sutras such as this one and speak poorly of them?" Ananda, the Blessed One said, "Not only will there be those who reject such sutras as this one and speak poorly of them, there will also be monks who perform many negative deeds and leave aside their obligations as monks." So, is that a downer to end with? You're just saying that because you want to end it. What a great story to hear, to imagine elephants and diamond thrones and such, the Nagas with their water spouts. And then 2 pages later, kind of being given a question. You know, do you really believe this? And how do we think about this in our 2019? I'll confess, during the break, I had to go home. I'm just 7 minutes by car because I forgot my whisk at home. I didn't change clothes. I wore my robes and my neighborhood looked exactly the same. I don't think there's anybody on my whole street that is celebrating Buddha's birthday. And I was a little disappointed. I mean, there was nobody around to disappoint me, to sort of ask how they were going to celebrate. Maybe they were all putting flowers around pagodas and boiling the hydrangea tea. Maybe that's why I didn't see anybody on the street. Maybe they were all doing that, but I was a little disappointed that there were no festivities outside of 115 School Street. So I'm excited about it. I am very grateful for this practice and for the teaching of Buddha, and I love venerating Buddha in this way. And I still have to say, what do I think about the elephants and the Nagas? We have a couple more periods of meditation. Maybe we'll be visited by the elephants and the Nagas, who will, in our insightful meditation, vipassana, and it will be cleared up for us. May the elephants and the Garudas and the Yakshas and the Maharagas and the Nagas continue to lead us down the Bodhisattva path, and may our deeds along the Bodhisattva path be performed endlessly.